This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 745, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, and being cool. Fanboy Pick the Week, episode 745. I'm much chippier than I feel inside, Josh.
You feel quite chippy.
My name is Connor Gilpatrick, and I am roasting to death. And this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan. And is that the first official reference to heat?
It can't be the first of the year. It's late August.
Let me tell you. Well, this is the first heat we've had in California. You may have seen it on the news if you're someone who watches the news or reads the news.
I'm aware.
This is how hot it is. I was working at my desk today, you know, doing my work, and it's a wooden desk, and I had my arms on it as I was typing, and I moved my arm, and it slid right off because the sweat had built up, and just it made the desk so wet from the sweat that my arm slid off the table.
James Brown celebrity hot tub over there.
Yeah, exactly. We are a fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics.
If I may.
Yes, just go for it.
It's been lovely here this week.
Yeah.
It was in the low 90s for like a month.
Yeah.
And then this week it's been like in the low 60s, high 50s at night. And That's Lindsay incredible. And I are just jumping around like Happy Homer in Flushing Gardens. Just woo!
Well, that's great for you. We are a fanboy. We read a bunch of comics, no matter the quality. One of us picks the one we like the best, called the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books, the patron pick, listener mail. We have fun. Even if we're hot, even if the books aren't great, we still have a good time because that's our commitment to ourselves and to you. Here's your spoiler warning. Spoilers.
Yeah. Pick of the week is Thor number 6.
Or 732.
I would rather say that. I would give it an extra half a point if I was rating it because of that.
I meant to mention this last week because there was a couple of random DC books that had their original numbering. I just don't know why some books get the original numbering and some don't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Flash and Wonder Woman both are in the 700s for reasons I don't know, because the other books aren't, other than Action Comics and Detective. There's just this, I get why those two are, but why are Flash and Wonder Woman but not other books? It's very weird.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I mean like you could maybe say that the Marvel ones are like they are because the way that they, you know, LG Legacy is 732, yep. And they're saying this is part 6 of this
and
story.
And I'm cool. Like, whatever. Herald I've already given up. I've given up the fight. But I think it's cool that they at least put it on the cover.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than acting like it didn't happen, yep. I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's talk
when
about
I,
numbering for the rest
when
of the
I
show.
When I started, I could do it. When I started this, I thought, oh, is this still the Donny Cates one? Because time has no meaning anymore.
Because this one's monthly.
Yeah.
And it's the point now where monthly books You have to reintroduce yourself. You got to shake my hand, look me in the eye, and remind me that we went to college together. That's what you have to do.
I just thought, was this a year ago?
Right.
I genuinely was like,
oh, I'm
going to
get
remember.
To that in a couple of books or a miniseries. Yeah.
So, you know, we're at the end of this story where Galactus or Galen.
I hate that part.
Yes. No, anytime that they give a long-standing character a new first name and then people start calling him by it is terrible. It started with Cosmo Kramer. And
in 1994.
Know, for me. I was like, we're going to call him that now? The
it's
whole
much
point,
cooler to say Galactus.
It is. And then they're, you know, they're all casual. Jed Bartlett. You know,
like, I don't want to see like Galactus leaning on a car, you know, hood, talking to Thor.
So, anyway...
Unless he's wearing a Letterman jacket.
Galactus comes up to Thor and says, hey, man, end is coming. It's the dark winter or the black winter or whatever it is. You got to be my herald and, you know, we'll share it and then we'll take care of it. And Thor's like, makes sense. Let's go. And it turns out that I actually don't fully understand what happened. I was about to explain it to you and I realized I couldn't. However, the point here is that I thought, is this Donny Cates still on there? And I was in the mood for some of that business.
He's very good at Thor.
Oh, yeah. No, there were several moments in this where, like, this Thor is a bad... I was going to say badass, but that's meaningless. But, like, he's a take-no-prisoners Thor. Yeah. He's not the happy, fun Thor.
Just give no fucks Thor. He...
Yeah.
So the overall thing is, as the plane flies overhead, I have to have everything open, guys. I'm sorry. So Galactus came to Thor and said, yes, the dark winter is coming. The dark winter, or is that what... I'm just going with what you said. Is that what it is?
I don't know. It's a little black snowflake. It's something winter.
Yeah, so that is the thing that killed his universe. Because as we know, Galactus, his universe was destroyed and he survived into our universe, the Black Winter. Yeah. So he says, I need your help to be my herald so we can defeat the Black Winter, which has come to this universe. And we found out it's not here to destroy the universe. It's here to destroy him. And we found out in this issue or probably maybe the previous issue that Galactus was the herald of the Black Winter, so I didn't like that part so much. But Galactus, you know, got some superpower from sucking up the energy of five specific Earths to fight the Black Winter. Now he's got all this power, and Thor sort of turns tables on him in this issue. I thought this was good.
Yeah, I mean, so in terms of giant cosmic / Norse god moments and overwrought dialogue, mm-hmm. and I say thee nays. You know, and I have the power, and you are the errand boy of a hailstorm. And I was like, yes. there was a lot of that, and it was something I could use. You know, it was something I could take it. And then we get to this point on page 13. They don't label double page spreads as two pages. So the double page spread is just page 13.
Right,
you know, and
Thor
flings, you know, Mjolnir at Galactus, and he says, I sentence you to death. And you see this shot of Galactus I've never seen before.
Yeah.
His face shrinks like his skin is sucking in as if he's looked upon the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
If you look around his hands and his arms, like his uniform is coming off. There's some Kirby dots in there too. There's a lot going on here that I like looking at. And there's a big krakoom, and it goes underneath the art, so it's part of what's going on. You know, it has motion with that. Like, this page was the one where I was like, that is what I want to see sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we cut to the next page, you know, and you know, I've never seen Galactus like this. He is, you know, he's hurt. He's skinny. He's destroyed. He's smoking, like not like cigarettes. Like, he's literally smoking. You have no idea what you've done. And basically Thor is like, you're a bad person.
Galen.
Yeah, like you're not good. And then no matter what you're trying to save us from, that's...
it doesn't make up for everything else, buddy.
Yeah, you're not pardoned. And so then, you know, Thor flies. And basically the whole thing is bookended by the fact that this has already happened. And the Silver Surfer, who Donny Cates made black at some point, I don't know why, you know, comes in. And he's like, hey, can we talk? We were both heralds. And, you know, because Thor's just in his throne room sulking. Tells him the whole thing, you know. And so we come back to the present. And we're outside. We're the Rainbow Bridge. And they've got Galactus's helmet as like the gate, and I was like, "That's cold as shit, Asgard."
Yeah, he's dead. That's what we should point out. He's dead.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, no, that's also a big thing. They killed Galactus in this. Now it's Marvel Comics.
And he's a cosmic character. There's no rules to that. He'll be back.
But just the image of that sort of helmet there as like a big
big grim trophy. I just liked that image a heck of a lot. And then, you know, there's basically the last image, you know, what did you see when you saw the future? Basically, the winter shows Thor how his end will be.
Thor's end.
Yeah. And you know, Thor's like, I didn't see anything. No big deal. And then you see what he saw.
Well, what I really liked was that the Black Surfer says, what did you see? And mm-hmm. he kind of looks at us. And for a second, I thought they were making it like really meta. Mm-hmm. Like he sees us, you know, like
you got Animal Man.
Animal Man. And then you turn the page and it's this scene with Thanos and the hammer and then some sort of black gauntlet. And I don't know if this is teasing the mini event that Donny Cates is doing within his books.
And also the behind him is the Marvel Zombies.
Right. Like he's doing some sort of Venom / Silver Surfer / Thor, like all the books he's doing some event. I don't know if this is that or this is just some random image, but
I would like it if it was the other, like they just leave us with this thing,
right?
And then, you know, like in 10 years take it up again or whatever,
or don't, because you know you've many infinite possibilities in these things. But I thought this was great. And Nick, I mean, we talked about Donny Cates and we talked about how great Nick Klein was. We just haven't called him out by name. He's mm-hmm. this book is great. Nick Klein has several styles. And this one really works for this book. It's a great looking book.
It's really great. You've got Matt Wilson on colors. Matt Wilson also like seems like he's doing a thing for this book that he's not necessarily doing for other books. Like I wouldn't look at this and be like, oh, that's
Matt
Wilson.
It's a more muted Matt Wilson.
It is. I mean, it's beautiful in terms of color palettes and the energy. And I love the thing where the pages are colored in such a way that it seems like in certain pages, like it's actually luminescent, but it isn't. You know, the lightning looks like it's glowing. You know, all of Galactus's energy is coming off the thing. You know, the way that he drew Galactus is just fantastic the whole way through. You know, the way that you've got Thor at the end just shattered. You know, just yep. tired. You know, shattered's not the right word.
He's tired and drunk and he's scared.
Yeah, scared and sad, and it like takes this big character who you've seen be sort of hulking and all powerful through the whole thing, and he just looks small, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was a really fun Thor comic book, man. And I think, man, you know.
Well, it's quite a feat because, and this is the first arc post Jason Aaron, and that's why it's quite a feat because he did, you know, like an all time Thor run over the course of the 9 years or whatever it felt like it was. That he did Thor,
yeah,
and so to be the guy that comes on after and not drop that ball and write a really great Thor story, you know, is gutsy.
Well, also, we were talking about Cates' work a lot for a while,
yep.
and I really like his work. I like what he can do. He's perfect for a book like this. I don't like Venom.
No,
whether I don't like Venom because I don't think that book is good or because I just don't like the character, so I wouldn't even be able to tell you if the book was good. I tried it for a while, and I was like, this does nothing for me. So I'm glad that I still have this book to read his stuff on because, yep. I mean, I guess Venom's very successful, and they really enjoy working on it, but I just can't get into it. So it's nice that I still have this.
It's kind of like Venom is sort of like Tom Taylor's Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as much as I like Tom Taylor, I'm just not going to read Suicide Squad, and those characters showing up in the other book and in Death Deceased didn't entice me over there. But that's not about... We're not talking about that. We're talking about Donny Cates on Thor, but we could also talk about Tom Taylor on Injustice Year Zero if we're done talking about Thor.
I think
it was a fine pick of the week. I think it was I don't know what I would have done this week, but I don't know that Thor would have been in the conversation for sure.
It kind of at the end of the day, and I looked and I was like, this is really the only one that I could... You know, I was reading it, and I just thought, I'm really enjoying this.
It had the bombast you want. It had the really, mm-hmm. Epic art, and it had great character stuff, and had Galactus getting what was coming to him, even if we know it's not permanent. And
yeah, it just felt like there were stakes.
Yeah, and you're right. The image of his helmet as the entrance to the Rainbow Bridge was pretty fucked up in the best possible way.
Yeah, it was great.
Injustice Year Zero, number 4, the fourth chapter of the Digital First series. I have no idea how long it's going. Maybe 6. But that would only be 3 issues worth of comics, so who knows? This is the prequel to Injustice. I haven't started reading it yet. We downloaded the collection. Did you started reading it? Did you continue reading it, or did you stop reading it?
I haven't gotten very far since then.
So this has been focusing on the Justice Society in a prequel sense to that story. And here we get a lot of Nazi fight in action. And there's 2 things I really liked about this issue. One of my favorite things in old 1940s films is when they have, like, when they were making them during the war is like when they had like the gangsters turn on the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you'll have like it'd be like a cop story, and then the Nazis get involved, and the gangsters enemy will go, whoa, we're all Americans here.
Yeah.
Let's team up and fight these Nazis. You know, having the Rocketeer, you know, Paul Sorvino shooting at the Nazis. Here you've got the Joker, which felt a little strange. He's like, I'm a homicidal maniac, but I'm not a fucking Nazi.
That was fantastic.
Like, I'm not a traitor. Yeah. I'm not a bigot. And that was kind of cool. Like, I've never had the Joker in that scenario before, where it's like, what would he do up against the Nazis? Well, he'd kill some Nazis.
You know what? It backed up. He's not a bigot.
Yeah, he's not.
No matter, throughout all the years, he's never added, like, racism to his...
He's got that going for him.
He does. You know what? Credit where due.
And then the other thing was, this is jumping off of last week's conversation with Hawkman and Hawkwoman, is the Hawkwoman gets to take her mace to the face of a Nazi in a very satisfying way.
She does. she slams him right down. There was good Spectre in this.
Yeah.
I actually really dug the Spectre in this for just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even mind Harley Quinn in this. It was a good, you know, and also we were just talking about stakes, you know, when they say, you know, they got Johnny Thunder, I was like, that's not good.
No. And that's the kind of thing, if you're a longtime JSA fan, then it's really satisfying. So this issue, much like Thor, is a flashback tale with a bookend in the present. The present features Joker and Harley hearing about the JSA in the war. They're talking to one of the boy commandos who's now old, and he's telling them about this artifact that the Nazis had that the JSA confiscated from them, and then it was so powerful, so dangerous that they basically dropped it into the sea, into the deepest part of the sea, in the Mariana Trench. Is that right, or am I just hungry?
Mariana's Trench.
I'm hungry for pasta.
The Mariana Trench is delicious.
Yeah, that's where you dip all the bread.
You can order that at the Olive Garden. Man, like, it's a Mariana Trench. And
Screw the unlimited breadsticks. I want the Mariana Trench.
Your pasta comes in a tureen.
So the Joker and Harley want that device, and
The best part of that, though, is it's ridiculous to be like, it's at the bottom of the Marianas Trench.
Yeah.
And then the Joker's like, nah, I know people. Harley, fetch my swimsuit. And this is the first little bit of Joker I've enjoyed in I don't know how long.
Next, Black Manta. So that's how they're going to get it.
Yeah.
And I assume these, whether it's this one alone or whatever their Joker's doing, is going to lead to the shenanigans in Injustice. But for now, you've got a really fun JSA in the war story. And I really like it. And the art is unusual, but I like it too. It's very heavy. It's heavy, thick lines.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with the way that these pages get cut in half. If these were printed on normal comic book pages, I think there'd be less of that. But there is some of it.
Cyan Tormi? Tomi?
Yeah.
Tormi. Yeah. I liked it.
Do you know, sometimes there will be a musical artist, and a lot of people will talk about them, and you'll realize after a while that... you never really understood it or got into it, but it wasn't because you didn't like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's Daniel Warren Johnson to me.
Interesting, because I was going to ask you, this is...
Like, I'm aware of him, but it's like some band that I never got around to checking
Wonder
out.
Woman Dead Earth, Book 4, the final chapter of this Black Label miniseries, written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson. But you read that book he did.
I read one, the Murder Falcon one?
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't really, like, I thought it looked really cool, and it was kind of, but I wasn't like, I got to know what happens next with Murder Falcon.
This was very good, I think. This is what we're talking about.
What's the pitch?
I'll tell you in a second, but the problem is, and it's not the fault of the book, is that it's at least monthly. It may be more than monthly. And I'm pretty sure it started before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had to go back in the archives.
I have no recollection of any of this happening in any way.
Right.
Like, no, I've never heard this title. I've never, there's four of them. I didn't know what it was.
I'd be very curious to see what you think. This is, the pitch is this. Wonder Woman wakes up after some sort of injury. She's in like a healing tank, and she finds that the Earth has, she basically failed in her mission to bring peace to Earth, and in a nuclear war has basically destroyed itself. And so we're dealing with the aftermath. The post-apocalyptic world that has been born. Now, a lot of people blame her directly, and I don't remember why. That's part of the consequence of the first issue coming out so long ago. But there's a band of survivors who don't like her. And it turns out that in the final battle of this story, she has to face off against her mother and the Amazons, who've come to basically wipe out everybody else because the rest of the world sucks. Which is not necessarily wrong. And so here we get a lot of interesting flashbacks. We see her in, we see her post injury with Batman, who puts her in the healing cave. And so he's the one that saved her, and or the healing device. And then he goes off. He's dying of radiation poisoning from the blasts. And he there's a really great scene where he goes off, pours himself a real drink, sits in on a couch in the bombed out Wayne Manor. So there's a giant hole overlooking like the wastelands, and he sits and has a drink as he dies. It was a really great scene. And then this is just a big, giant, crazy battle between Wonder Woman and her side versus the Amazons and their side. And I think Daniel Warren Johnson's an incredible artist. He's really incredible.
I think that's true. And it's funny because we were talking about movement and manga, and there's a lot of that present here.
So you're looking at it now, too.
Yeah, I am looking at it right now. And I like his art. I don't...
It's got a little Paul Pope stuff going on.
Yeah, like I liked it. I never liked Paul Pope all that much, though.
No, but I don't dislike, but I'm not like a huge Paul Pope fan. But
yeah,
this is on the edge, like in what I want in a superhero comic. So like one more step to the right into Paul Pope, and then not necessarily what I want from a superhero comic, but it's just enough to make it really interesting to me.
So I think with something like Murder Falcon. You know, like I liked what it looked like an awful lot, but this sort of story and the concept didn't really do a lot for me. And I don't know. I feel like this does look great for sure. I mean, did you like the story?
Yeah, I did. You know, it's basically a big fight and a little Wonder Woman dealing with guilt. There's a couple of things that, you know, you may notice as you're looking at this issue on page 30 and on page that whole sequence, she's fighting Nubia. She's beating the crap out of Nubia with Superman's skull and spinal column.
I saw that. I didn't know that was Superman's. That's Superman's
skull and spinal column as a weapon. She finds his body, and you think she's going to honor him. Instead, she reaches inside and rips his skull and spinal column out. Now, that was a hard image, and I don't know that everyone would like to see that, but
in the abstract, it's pretty great.
Tough times lead to tough things, and it's a very effective weapon.
The coloring by Mike Spicer is fantastic.
It's a great looking book.
It's a really good looking book.
Really the dynamic pages.
You know, it really is one of those things like I can look at it and I can say that's really cool, but I'm not necessarily gravitated towards this.
It may not be what everybody wants right now. It looks great. But it does look great. Yeah. Look at the Batman scene on page 5. That's the drink before dying. It's just a really well done silent page. You know, pulls in, pulls out.
I like that kind of grid a lot.
I liked this miniseries. I would be curious to see how I feel rereading it all in one go, because it was like every issue was like, oh, what happened? And I still don't necessarily remember everything, but I do remember enough to know I never liked it.
I assume it's like a slightly different continuity, so it's not like you even have.
Well, it's Black Label. It's in whatever you want continuity to be in. It's just a future.
But sometimes, if you're missing things, you're like, well, I know where, you know, who these people are and what it is, but if it's not that, you don't have that to, you don't have
But if you, I mean, if you're in a store, if you're in a place where stores are open, flip through it, take a look at it. This is a book by Andy Corey, who's no longer with the company, and Mark Doyle, who's no longer with the company, so
they're great editors.
Yeah. Wolverine number 4, every time I think, why am I reading this?
I thought that
I really like this. This is written by Benjamin Percy with art by Peter Bogdanovich, who we liked before on various things, but like New Superman in particular. Color by Matthew Wilson, Corey Pettit. It's a great creative team. And the first 3 issues were an arc, and it was okay. But I like this one a lot as a kickoff. It almost serves as like a one-shot story. Wolverine is feeling down on himself. I like the idea that he has his own secret gate to Krakoa that he built to Canada that's next to a bar, and it looks like he has it hidden in like a shack, so you can't even see the gates there. And so he goes to this like shitty Canadian bar. Like he says, like, you know, it's a place to go if you go to want to punish yourself, because they only serve like beer and the worst kind of bottom barrel whiskey, and like no one wants to drink that. And he goes, and everyone in the bar is a little standoffish. There's this weird guy grinning like the Joker in the corner, and one guy tries to fight him, and that doesn't work out so well for that guy. And there's a over the hill older lady with 3 teeth who is maybe coming on to him, maybe not. And it turns out he's been poisoned, and all these people in the bar have reason to hate him, and they try to kill him by basically drugging him and then dropping him in the frozen lake and having it freeze back over, kind of like the old guard, you know, like drowning mm-hmm. over and over again, which I guess is now the new thing to do to immortals. Mm-hmm. But it was this almost like interesting one shot, almost horror, you know, thriller esque story about people trying to get revenge on Wolverine, and it doesn't go well for them in the end.
Who's that character? Is that Omega Red?
Omega Red, who's like one of those 90s.
Ugly.
Yeah.
Ugly. It's a bad cover.
But it's a great looking book inside.
Yeah, no, it is. You're absolutely right.
And I enjoyed reading it.
Also,
I don't know why.
The logo's terrible.
Yeah.
The Wolverine. They're all, I don't know, you know, it's a thing, but.
You know, it's sort of a side book. It's not really involved in the main X-Men story.
Do you normally read Wolverine?
I usually try to read it when there's a new series of it. I like, you know, uh-huh. I like Wolverine.
I like Ben Percy, though. You're a Ben Percy fan.
What has he written before?
Didn't you read Green Arrow for a while?
Possibly.
I think so.
It wasn't a detraction.
Yeah.
I was just curious with the reboot how Wolverine was, and I liked it enough to keep reading.
So you've been reading it since the beginning?
Well, it was only 4 issues.
Those come out monthly?
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions for
monthly.
You.
Monthly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
You know what else makes sense? Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you want to go if you want to support this show. You know, sometimes it's better than others, some episodes, and sometimes you want to support shows that are good.
You know what? If it makes sense, if you don't like a particular episode, you tell yourself, I'm not supporting this one. I'm supporting the one I like.
Yeah, and the thing is, we try. You can't say we don't try. Where am I in the script? We have a new stretch goal, G.I. Joe Corner, a weekly, monthly, look at each month, each episode of G.I. Joe Real American Hero, whatever.
What's funny is that we normally do this in the morning, and now we're doing it at night, and it's a whole other different kind of incompetence that's happening.
Yeah, because now we're doing it in the time I would be having dinner,
and I'm
which
sleeping.
Is why I was thinking about the Marinara Trench. the vodka sauce trench. Anyway, do we have time for another show? No, we don't. But we'll do it if you unlock it at patreon.com/ifanboy. And also, listen, you may not want a G.I. Joe podcast, and that's totally fine. But you may want a quarterly barbecue video show. I do. I would like to eventually one day see these guys again and eat barbecue and record it and talk nonsense and answer your emails. And that's our next stretch goal after the G.I. Joe show. So maybe you just leapfrog over that one and go to the barbecue.
What I was really looking for is thousands of people going, oof, Josh did get fat. That's well, what I want.
The good news is you got time because no one's flying anywhere
willingly
for a while.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a great time over there. We have a Discord server. We have a Facebook group. We have monthly hangouts. We have the patron voting. We have, you know, silly stuff that happens with the patrons. We had a watch party. We watched X-Men Apocalypse with the patrons only. That was fun. We want to do another watch party like that. That was a good time. So we try to make it fun. We try to make it worth your while. But really, at the end of the day, you're helping support keeping the show going. And that's the most important thing. If you like the show, that's how we keep going. That's justify the time and the expense and, you know, me not eating dinner with my wife right now. T-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. That's where you can go to check out our T-shirts. We have 8 designs, including the Stalemore Reed Comics design. That a portion of all sales go to the Comic Book United Fund for that one. And ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal. And ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to buy the books on our Booksplode, our general link for Amazon. And that's where you can. These are all the places you can go, and all the way you can help. If you feel like helping, of course, there is no obligation, and the show will always be free.
So, A Man Among Ye.
Ye.
Ye, number 2, mm-hmm. From Image Comics, specifically yep. Top Cow, which I was like, oh, look at that.
Yep.
This is by Stephanie Phillips, who you may remember from, what was it called?
The Butcher of Paris.
Paris, Butcher of Paris. And Craig Cermak, who I remember from Red Sonja.
Mm, yes.
It's a pirate story. There's mm-hmm. a lady, and she's like second in command to the famous pirate. Not the Dread Pirate Roberts, and not Black, you know, but that kind of pirate. Calico Jack, which is a good pirate name.
Was that it?
Something like that.
I conjured that in my head.
So I think the first issue kind of dug it, but you
Calico
know we weren't
Jack.
Sure weren't sure what it was about. This one sort of starts to flesh things out a little bit. There's a little bit of a, you know, go ladies.
We're building a lady pirate crew is what we're doing.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was fun to read. It's piratey. There are stakes. I think that this writer Stephanie Phillips has some things to say. There was, you know, the interesting bits with the guy who is in charge of Fort Nassau. So he's in the Bahamas.
Who was the real guy?
Yeah, I like that too. Like, it's there's, you know, real historical
as
stuff
much as you can.
There.
There's almost no fact about pirates. It's all legend and myth. I mean, it's kind of Disney pirate-y a little bit, but I'm okay with that because pirate stuff's all made up anyway. So you might as well lean into the R and the matey stuff and go for
and,
it.
You know, there's no, you know, they're not ape pirates. There's not an alien. It's just a pirate story, and I'm down with that. And while pirates were very cliche in comics of old, they're pretty rare now, you know, so.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that they're publishing it. I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah, I was, you know, just a fun comic. It's not pick of the week, but, you know. What's funny is that I saw the title and I had no recollection of having read it before. I mean, from the title, like when I looked at it, I went, oh, it's this book. But like for the second time, I was like, A Man Among Ye. I got to check that out. Oh, right. Yeah. Like I was.
I like it. It's fun. Yeah, it's a jaunty little pirate adventure. You still reading G.I. Joe?
I checked this one out because I got a tip from a little bird. G.I. Joe number 7, this is at the end of, starts a new arc, basically. Mm-hmm. Or it happens after the end of the last arc, which is the first 6. Still being written by Paul Aller and art by Chris Evenhui, with colors by Brittany Peer and letters by Neil Uyotake.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm going with that. What this issue is it's basically a PTSD issue about Scarlet.
Interesting.
And she's so in this world, Cobra has taken over, and G.I. Joe are basically part of the resistance.
Yeah, that's what I think. I read the first 3 or 2.
Yeah, I read something like that, and you know, I didn't love it. It was fine, but it was just I realized I'm very particular about G.I. Joe. Yeah. Like I'm like, well, you know, I like the cartoons from when I was a kid, and I like those comics. There was that time when we were all really excited about G.I. Joe Cobra, and that was still an outlier, though. I can't think of another.
Those books were all good. We read Origins, which was very good, and we read their main book was the least good. But at that point, I don't know, 15 years ago, I'm just picking a number out. Yeah, it was a long time ago. There were 3 solid G.I. Joe books, but they were doing it by honoring the past but giving it a harder, realistic edge, which was a really fine line to walk, and they didn't walk it for a super long time.
So in this one, you know, Duke basically tells Scarlet she's grounded until she go get some therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the things that I'm saying, you might be saying, because I'm thinking them, don't seem to fit with what my idea of G.I. Joe is. And I don't necessarily want these things in a G.I. Joe comic. However, it should be said, I thought it was really good and it was really well done. If it wasn't G.I. Joe, it would probably have more impact with me. But, you know, the fact that it was, like, I'm also a different reader than from the time of G.I. Joe Cobra, and maybe I would feel the same way, but like I want less gritty realism in my stuff. I kind of wanted to be silly. But all that said, like it's a good issue.
You're in a point in the world where you need some escapism and not some realistic stuff.
Yeah, well, no, there's the thing. It's like when we were younger, I think that we wanted people to be able to, like, we got to take these comics seriously. You know, that's the whole spirit of 86.
Right.
And now I'm like, that's not the strength of comics.
Right.
You know, that's the difference in me. Point being, is it my favorite G.I. Joe comic? No, but it was a really good comic. And if that's the kind of story that you think would resonate with you, I think it's very thoughtful. I think it's very well written. I really like the art. I liked it on the first one that we read. You know, I think I want to go back to Yo Joe, but for what this is, it was fun. It's good. Fun's not the word, but it was really well done.
Batman: The Adventures Continue, number 10. This was your pick.
Are you still reading this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked this one. It's just basically like the quote-unquote origin of Jason Todd, and I liked that this Jason Todd it seems antithetical to itself because it's the animated, you know, sort of world and adventures, but this is pretty grim in that like Jason Todd's an asshole way more than in the comic books. Like he kicks Batman in the face at one point, and I was like, you can't do that.
Well, yeah, it's the same shock you get in a different way with Mad Love, but there's an angry dog across the street. It reminded me a lot of the comics at the time of Jason Todd. Like, one of the really classic indelible moments from me as reading comics was there's a story where they're trying to nail some like international crime lord or something, and they catch him like at home maybe beating his wife or something, and Batman's off like not looking, and suddenly we cut to the guy flying off the balcony, and Jason just says he slipped, and we never know what happened there.
No, that's great.
And so that reminded me a lot of this here, where he tries to toss the guy out the window.
I'll tell you what I found.
Or he does really toss the guy out the window. Badass. Yeah. Save Scarecrow.
I found really interesting with this one was afterwards Batman justifying it.
Oh, yeah. That was really interesting.
And I thought that, I was like, that's really interesting. Like, he's this person who's super intelligent and actually supposed to be kind of emotionally intelligent, but he's going the wrong way.
He can't admit that he may have made a mistake bringing Jason on, so he has to justify it. And Alfred's like,
I think it's part of that, but he also wants to believe in Jason, I think.
Oh yeah, but because he's trying to rescue him the same way he rescued Dick, and the same way he sort of was rescued by this life. But
so this is almost in contrast to what I was just talking about. Because we've made a comic book that looks one way, and I expect it to be one way, and I'd be fine with a very cartoony Batman book. But this one kind of surprised me, and because it was so well done, I worked. You know, I just, all of those things were really interesting Batman storytelling stuff that I'm not super familiar with.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, he's one of Bruce's sons, so, you know, people all the time will justify the bad behavior of their children.
Yeah, no, totally.
So that's kind of what's happening here. So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. Patreon.com/iFanboys, where you can go vote at a book to the rundown. And I'm a little surprised that the patron pick was Maestro number one, and not so much that it was the pick, but that it was such a blowout. It was almost the same exact blowout as last week, which was a huge blowout pick. This is written by Peter David, art by Herman Peralta and Dale Keown. I never know how to say that guy's name. Colors Jesus Abertoy and Jason Keith, letters Ariana Marr, and this book.
So Keown and Keith just did like sort of the opening scene and the rest of it to the book.
Well, I mean, it was like 12 pages. It wasn't short. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is the prequel to a miniseries that came out in 1992 or three.
I wasn't sure.
I know that's what it is. I read miniseries and I loved it, and so much that I got Peter David and artist George Perez, who drew it, to sign the first issue.
So was this like one of those throwbacky Marvel things that they've been doing, or was this a different thing? Because I know that we had read some of these before.
This is not that single issue. This is actually, okay, sounds like it's a miniseries. So as far as I know, I don't know. I'm just talking out of my ass. The original story was The Incredible Hulk, colon, Future Imperfect, and it was a two-issue prestige miniseries that was like a future story where the Hulk wakes up. But no, so the Hulk somehow gets sent to the future, and he finds that an evil version of himself called Maestro is in charge, and he's the despotic ruler of the future. And you can see the image, at least in this digital book, on the title page, page three, that's from the original comic, George Perez, and you can see half Hulk, half Maestro. And so he has to sort of defeat himself in the future. And I remember loving it. I haven't read it in decades, but so I was really kind of surprised that they would do this prequel mini of a, you know, what, how long ago was 1992? We'll say, you know,
I got to say, like, years ago, before I knew it was the pick of the week, and I was looking patron through. The patron pick, and I was looking through the books, and I thought, who is this for? Because it's old. I get that people love Peter David's Hulk, you know, story run, and like it is really important. But you know, how much call is there for this kind of?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
point?
That's the thing. Comics are built on nostalgia, and there's probably a huge number of people out there reading now who are my age or a little bit older who read those books. I mean, I didn't read,
I guess,
all of Peter David's run. I read some of it. I wish I had read it all because it's like one of the seminal all-time Marvel comics runs, but. I'm sure there's enough. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they have spreadsheets, and I'm sure they have market analysis that says that, you know, enough sales of the trades that justify.
It just seems like such an edge thing, you know, like that I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I also can't. I wouldn't imagine this is like a top seller. I don't know. There's probably a reason behind it.
I don't understand the economics.
But you know what's interesting?
Right,
I really liked it.
I did too.
It was really good. Like,
I had a blast reading it. I almost made it pick of the week at one point. Like, I
wasn't going to read it. And then it was patron pick, so obviously, so I read it, and I was like halfway through it, and I was like, is this really good?
It's fun.
It's really good.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, so it opens up with the the Peter David. And the funny thing is, like, Dale Keown didn't even draw the original. It was George Perez, because he can't draw anymore. So that's, I guess that's why he didn't draw the opening. But it's a little fantasy sequence where, you know, Hulk's on an adventure with the Avengers, and it's Captain America, and it's classic looking Thor and Vision and Scarlet Witch. And he realizes that this is not, none of this is real. And he is pulled out of it. It's always creepy when the Vision sticks his hand in people's bodies. Mm-hmm. The Vision in his dream sticks his hand in his head, and we wake, you know, we cut to Thor drawn by Herman Peralta, who was terrific.
Pause. Not the show, but just the thing. The only part I'm going to complain about in that first bit is
the coloring.
It's Black Widow, like, the sun's getting real. Like, stop it. You don't need to do this in here. This is Marvel Comics from the 90s.
Yeah.
That was a thing that they stuck in later. It wasn't that good in the movie.
It's a movie thing. Yeah.
And it's not even a good movie thing. So let it go. There's more. Anyway, so go on.
No, I didn't love the coloring. I thought it made his art look strange. But
I thought it made it look from an earlier time, so it kind of worked.
It also looks unreal. Maybe that works too, because it's not real.
Yeah.
Cut to Hulk with a beard and long hair, attached to a bunch of wires, and waking up, and he's in this containment thing, and it's a AIM facility, which is great. It's always great when AIM shows up. And
yeah,
we find that he's not held captive so much as he's being preserved along with a bunch of other characters who are radiation based, because out the outside world, much like Wonder Woman, there's been a nuclear war, and there's not a lot of survivors, but those who are have, you know, amongst this group, AIM, and of course the awesome reveal of MODOK, old man MODOK.
I was just laughing at the picture of MODOK before you said it. He has a little joystick, and he's got his little legs kicking around, and he's old and gray.
And wrinkly. And so they're trying to preserve society as best they can, and in about 20 years they can go back to the surface, so they're trying to keep everyone safe. And so it's not so much they were holding him captive as they were just holding him safely until he could get out. But he breaks out, goes to, and they're in L.A., and he's pissed, and I think this is a miniseries. I hope it is. Yeah, it is. There's the next issue page.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah, no, there was a cliffhanger at the end, because I thought we were just going to end it and that would be it. But I was kind of excited.
He has
about
a
that.
Planet of the Apes moment, kind of, when he sees downtown L.A. looking like it. They just shot San Andreas. I really enjoyed this. I thought the art was terrific. I thought Herman Peralta's art was really dynamic. And
yeah,
really
there's a Hulk. It was kind of Hulk I've never seen before. I really enjoyed, like, MODOK in this. Mm-hmm. I've never said that sentence. You know, like, we've moved forward and a bunch of shit has gone down, and now AIM is a different thing than it was.
Yeah.
You know, they still got the goofy helmets, and they're always around, and you're, yeah. I like that AIM sort of goes from being nefarious to being just, you know, just amoral, basically. Like, those are the sort of lines that we're scientists. We just don't give a shit about anything.
Right.
And I don't know what's happening. I don't know. But it's like, you know, this Hulk is interesting. And Peter David is not, you know, he's not an A creator anymore, but he's
good.
He's
at
a real
it.
Deal. Yeah, he is.
And, he's like, we talk about other 90s guys who come back and will knock it out of the park. You know, like they just because they're older doesn't mean they don't know how to write comics anymore. He's very good at this.
Yeah.
He was a top name for decades.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, God, I think the last thing I read that I really liked was he did the Multiple Man series.
Yeah.
Or his X-Factor. He did Multiple Man first and then X-Factor. That was a wonderful run. That was great. And I think that's the last series I read of him.
It might have been his last.
He had a stroke or something at some point. So he'd been through some stuff. But, I mean, he's still got it. Based on this issue, for sure.
Right.
It was totally fun.
Surprised. I was reading this, going, God, I really like this.
Had an experience like that in college once.
So that's Maestro number one from Marvel Comics. Man, if you're you don't even have to be a fan. Like, Josh never read the original series. He liked it. I read the original series. I liked it too. Check it out. Let's do the ratings on Maestro number one out of five. I'm giving it a solid 4.25.
I'm going to go with 4.
It was really fun, and the art was terrific, and I will be sticking with it, which is funny because I wasn't even going to read it in the first place. So,
yeah.
Thanks, patrons.
I'm going to read it too. Good pick.
And over at patreon.com/ifanboy, if you give it a $5 or higher level, you get Superpower live on the show. And Josh?
Brad Garver has the ability to destroy weeds and invasive plants with finger blasts like Palpatine.
It's like lightning.
Yeah, and he destroys any crabgrass growing up between your you know bits of your patio or
so if he shoots his blast at it doesn't hurt your pavement or your patio. No. It doesn't hurt your regular grass.
Just the bad ones. So like he will wreck some kudzu.
Mm-hmm.
Or something creeper. I forget. There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're outside. They're everywhere.
Well, there you go. That's helpful.
And also, it is thrilling to watch him do it.
You get the sound and everything?
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Curtis, Josh, you recall one of your all-time favorite Avengers triathlon?
I do.
Triathlon had the three-time enhanced ability of...
Triple.
A normal man.
Yeah.
Michael Curtis has the three-time enhanced street smarts, powerful singing voice, and sense of taste of a normal man.
Well.
So you take a normal man's street smarts, he's got three times as much street smarts.
So
he's basically a New Yorker.
So he's reading the streets.
Yeah.
He can tell what's going on. He knows where the game's being played. He knows how not to be played.
He takes it to the streets. He knows those streets.
And what was the other?
The streets aren't going to get it over on him.
Singing voice. Difficult to dovetail that with the street smarts, right, I'm going to be.
It's an odd configuration. And then sense of taste. So everything is just luxurious on his palate.
So he's going to need that street smart because he is, you know, he's a target out there, basically.
Yeah. Like that dog across the street.
He disarms them.
Yeah.
With his, like, all of a sudden he'd be like, you know, they'll come after him and he'd be like, "Whoa!"
You think he might be a feat, you know, because he can sing and he can talk about the where this mushroom came from, which region of the valley, but then he can tell who's not cottoning to his talk because of his street smarts.
Right. And he knows how to work it, too.
Yeah. Michael Curtis.
Michael Curtis. That's a very odd and specific combination of things.
Brad Garver, Michael Curtis. Thanks for being patrons over patreon.com/ifanboy. And before we get to the emails, I thought it was really interesting. I meant to mention this last week. When DC left Diamond over the break, we got inundated with emails, like buried in them from people worried, scared. What does this mean? When 1/3 of DC's staff got laid off, not a single email.
That's weird.
Not a single email about that. We got emails about other things. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a single email from anybody asking anything about DC, worried, wondering. I found it very interesting that...
But the distribution woes.
Because it shows you how sort of everyone is inside baseball in the comics community.
Uh-huh.
But ultimately, that didn't mean anything, as we suspected at the time.
Yeah.
The real, as we talked about last week, the real possibility of things changing didn't generate one single email. Not to take away from these emails we're going to read, but it was just interesting.
It is interesting. There weren't, which is fine.
I was prepared for it. As soon as the announcement came out, I was like, this is what we're going to be talking about on the show. We're going to get a lot of emails.
I don't know what to make of it yet. I mean, I think it's the thing is that it's there's a lot of bad signs about it, but I don't think that we've really seen, and it's not over from, I mean, who knows?
Jeff Reed, our old columnist, wrote in.
Jeff Reed, who's clearly not listening to the show, says,
"No, yeah, exactly.
I don't blame.
So how's he
going to
hear this?
I don't know. Because
if he would know the answer to this question if you were listening. Therefore, ipso facto, he'll never hear the answer.
All right. Well, here's what I know.
Yep.
Jeff Reed is like the most decentest of humans.
Yes.
He's a good person, so I'm going to help him out. I'm going to do this in front of
everybody. No, we will answer questions that we've talked about on the show before.
If it helps other people out, so much the better. Jeff says, I fell off modern comics hard a few years ago. However, I have two trades on order that I would like your opinion on. I didn't like the beginning of Bendis' Superman run. His creation of a villain that was really behind Krypton's destruction felt forced and unnecessary, though I felt the same way about Rogue One revealing who was really behind there being a flaw in the Death Star. A conspiracy is way more boring and non-relatable than the old way these things were destroyed through hubris. Pause. He is kind of an expert on DC history.
Yeah, he used to write our history columns, the DC history columns.
He knows his stuff, so that's a fair...
Also, I'm all with him here. That was all correct. Everything he said in that paragraph was correct.
That's true. So back to it. Yeah. So if I didn't like Bendis' Superman and I dropped off early on, can I enjoy and get something out of the Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen 12-issue series that are getting trades released in the next few months? Are they too tied to the Mothership series? Should I save my money and just get them from my library where I work and whose graphic novels I directly purchase? Because he is a librarian also. That's the question.
First of all, Jeff, why don't you ask us before you order things? We could save you some money here, because as much as it pains me to say it, and I have to really stress this, it really pains me to say it, don't waste your money in Lois Lane.
I'm not quite that far along, but I would probably not give it a full-throated recommendation. I think there's things that are interesting in there, but overall as a thing, no.
As a piece, it was not successful. The beginning was really interesting and fun, and then it just sort of went too deep inside of whatever conspiracy Greg Rucka was trying to investigate, and it ended in a not satisfactory manner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're talking about how is it tied into the Mothership series, only very tangentially in the fact that you have to know that, well, Lois is off writing this book, and also I believe at some point
Superman is outed,
and that's really it. That's all you need to know about that.
Superman outs himself. But,
right.
Jimmy Olsen, same but opposite. It's barely tied into it. I think there's one or two lines near the end.
Right, and now we talked about that, how that they were the worst part of the whole series was the couple of throwaway lines that tied it in. But ultimately, before that part, it's just totally wacky. And also, as a side note, because I know Jeff, he loves the Silver Age.
This is
right up his alley.
It's delightful. This is going to win Eisners. It's a wonderful book.
Well, hopefully. But I think in terms of Jeff's likes, dislikes, I think this is right up his alley. This is a wacky Silver Age tale in the best possible way.
Yep. Funny.
And you don't really need to know what's going on in the book. If you want us to make personalized recommendations based on your tastes, then you first of all have to come right for our website for a few years, and then you can write in and we'll know your tastes and therefore can properly recommend books.
Yeah, I'll go with that. What kind of time are we looking at?
One more.
Let's save the deep one, and we'll do the silly one that no one cares about.
This silly one seems more appropriate for Media Splode.
Yeah, there it is, though.
All right. Ryan from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Ryan said, his two questions. Number one, for Josh. This is not a short answer, and you're going to really annoy people by answering this question.
I'm not.
For Josh, what makes something a good or bad pressing of a record?
All right, so we have to go back to 1932. No. I've been buying a lot of records through this whole thing. I mean, I have been in general.
You're buying
but
180
really,
grain?
Yeah, gram. 180 Whatever. Gram yeah. in the marinara trench.
Yeah.
Whole
grains. That's how many are on my
that
bread.
That has to do with weight.
My bread's really heavy. I make 180 grain bread.
So for a while, I'm just seeing a record and I'm buying it. I'm like, oh, this is good. I like that record. Mm-hmm. But I started noticing some of them didn't sound so good. Which led me to the idea that if I go look up comments and reviews on a specific record, I can find out whether that pressing is good, which means that that batch of records that they produce, whether it was done from a good master or whether it was just done sloppily or just didn't come out very well, and I started noticing it. One of my favorite albums of all time is Radiohead's In Rainbows, and there's a record of it, the one that you would go buy in any store in the country, and it sucks. It's like one of the best sounding albums, and the record has none of it in it. So I bought one from Italy that was sent here, and it's much better. So it's like you basically, my tip for record buying is if you give a shit about what things sound like, then you should check which version you're getting before you just buy one, because it can make a big difference.
It's a lot like a lot of transfers. Like we did our Media Explode on Midnight Run, and I bought the only existing version of the Blu-ray for that movie.
It's just
I love
like
that movie, and it's not a good transfer
from
the original film master, but it's the only one that exists, so I don't have a choice.
I mean, I have the same way in Blu-ray. I have, I'm gonna say it's either Gangs of New York or Reign of Fire, one of those two of my sort of favorite movies, and one of them looks terrible. Like, I was like, what happened? It's a Blu-ray, you know, it's like it's not good. Meanwhile, you can go back and pull out like an old DVD, and some of them look terrible, but like I put in my Gladiator DVD, which is like 20 years old, it looks great. It's a wonderful digital transfer. Now, it's not super high res, but so anyway, the other thing that happens with records is a lot of records aren't mastered from the original, so they're mastered from digital, which is sort of antithetical.
Well, you know, a lot of masters were lost. There was that big Universal fire a couple years ago. They lost a lot of original masters, like really big albums.
anything recorded in the last 20 years was, you know, most of it was probably recorded to digital anyway, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense to put it on a record. But, you know, there's all sorts of things about fidelity and dynamic range and all those things. But, you know, the thing is, like, if you get a record, what do you think? We're at 2% are enjoying this and the rest are just like, fucking stop it.
I warned everyone. I don't want to say I didn't.
Yeah, that's fine. And this next question of his is so weird that I was like, I have to put this in here because I don't know what's going to happen.
Question two, what do you guys think of the new Taylor Swift album? It's a pretty decent, sorry, I have a reaction to the laughter in the room. It's a pretty decent singer-songwriter effort and curious if it even landed on your radars. And I haven't heard it. I've read great things about it. I read the New York Times raved about it. There was a couple of places raved about it. I like Taylor Swift. I think she's a good singer-songwriter. I have no problem saying that.
I had a suspicion that you would say something like that, and you would mean it. And I'm not making fun of you.
Pop music stuff.
Sure,
especially as she grew out of like being the teeny bop country singer. But I have not heard anything from her album because I don't drive anywhere, and I also
you have a record player, but you're not going to buy the record.
No longer listen to the radio in my car. I mean, I like. So I have a couple of songs like on iTunes of hers, but I don't like buy albums or anything.
Here's what I know about Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. End of story.
Okay, so
No. I know that
this would not fall on Josh's radar.
I know that she's pop and that people who like pop things but have a good taste.
Your wife would probably like Taylor Swift.
Tend to like No. That's not a thing.
Because she wasn't a 90s singer?
Yeah, she's too young. She's too young. But you know, we went through a while.
She's my age.
No, Taylor Swift is
too
young.
Oh, Taylor Swift is too young.
Yeah. Taylor Swift is too young for her.
I'm trying to throw you a bone here, so you're calling your wife
too young. My kids went through a thing where they really liked the song Bad Blood, mm-hmm. but we would listen to the remix with Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
And so I know every beat of that.
That's what I mean. She does interesting stuff. Like, with, you know, anyway, this is not a show about Taylor Swift. We get more downloads.
I know that people are like, I love that this is a thing that's happening. I was like, these questions have nothing to do with anything. We should totally do them.
This is what happens when it's hot out.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring it home.
Contact@ifanboy.com is where you can write us in. And if you have questions about DC, you missed it. The window's closed. No more DC talk. That's not true.
Sorry.
We'll answer them if they're good. That's how you can write in and get in the show. Thanks for that. And coming up this week is our Booksplode show. I'm just trying to do the calendar math in my head because things happen at different times. Coming up this week is our Booksplode show where we're reviewing Pluto Volume 1. Behind this show in the feed is Mediasplode number 6. Perry Mason is our main topic, but it's only about a third of the show. We spent about a third of the show on what else we've been watching, plus talking about how much we miss going to the movies, plus our new segment called The Grab Bag, which is like the last 15 minutes of the show.
Not so humbly, I think that was our best Mediasplode episode.
So, you know, Perry Mason may be the main topic, but if you didn't watch Perry Mason, there's a lot of other things talked about on Mediasplode this week. A lot of surprising shows were watched in the last month. And then really the first 10 minutes is about how much we miss going to the movie theaters and that experience. And that's a fun discussion as well. I like that episode. It's a good episode.
Yep.
If I may associate myself.
You can head over to ifanboy.com. You can find that podcast, all of our podcasts, the history of podcasts. This podcast is what I'm saying. You know what I'm getting at?
History of records.
You might think that Serial was the first podcast, but if you go on that website, you're going to find out that these fools have been doing it for a long time, since way back, since Taylor Swift was a gleam in someone's eye.
Oh, God, how old was... I don't know. Nope, not doing that math.
I know she was young, but she might be like 30 now. I don't know,
but I'll be depressed if it's like she was 5 when we started podcasting.
Oh, that's probably true.
That's what I mean.
You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out so that you can be prepared by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following at ifanboy on Twitter and at ifanboycomics on Instagram, where you will also see some Best of the Weekend panels. And I don't know how Connor finds a really cool thing for the Wednesday post every week, but he does, and I'm impressed by it.
Not always. I try,
well,
though.
Depends on
how busy I am Wednesday.
Just take it. The fact that if I did it, it would never happen. I wouldn't remember. True. C.S. Gilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. Did sign back onto Twitter briefly.
Yeah, I saw you jump back in the pool when I went to post the thing on Twitter.
I was mostly just wanted to comment on that Cy Spurrier thing because I was really impressed by what he wrote about Hellblazer.
I'm sure it'll be good for your mental health to go back on Twitter.
I'm going
to
get off it again. Subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy and keep up to date on the old video show re-uploads. This past week, these are not correct.
These are not correct, but I can tell you. We had my mini on Aquaman called What's Wrong with Aquaman and My Defense of Aquaman, based, I might add, on an email from Timmy Wood. And the second episode was a spotlight on Tim Sale. And the third episode was, I just had it in my head. Oh, a vault show. We talked about three. You know, people often ask us, why don't you guys ever talk about A, trades, or B, like indie books on this show? It doesn't really fit the format of this particular show. But back in the old days, when we were doing seven shows a week, six of which were video, that was the place we talked about trades and collections and indie books, and most often on the vault shows, and those were where we each picked a book and talked about it from our quote-unquote vault of comics.
And also we were doing that full time, so we had time to read.
Right, but the point is, if you want to hear us talk about some seminal indie work, that's going to be in the video shows. You can look for that. But this vault show, I couldn't tell you exactly what we talked about. I only know as far as we did the vault show on Friday.
What happens if they like this show? What do they do?
Dig the show, write us a review, or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you aggregate your shows. That's a great way to help people find the shows. Algorithms are all based on star ratings and on reviews, and we thank you, everyone who does that. It's a very easy way to help the show. Any show you listen to, any podcast, not just ours, any show if you like it, it's just something you can do. Even better than that is word of mouth. Tell your friends. People ask all the time. You know, podcasts are very popular, but they're still a growing medium, and if people say, hey, I want to listen to podcasts, which ones do I like? You know, maybe they enjoy really deep record talk. They may be a lunatic, and if it's the case, then point
I suggest they listen to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
and if they're a huge Taylor Swift fan, this is the episode for them.
Have you checked? Have you looked at Apple Podcasts to see where we're at?
I know I don't have Apple Podcasts.
Well, you have an Apple.
I have iTunes.
Just search podcasts. It's on there. We are. Is Around Comics listening? We are at 5 stars average. Over 15 years, and 1,600 ratings.
I think what you should do is, on the next person who leaves a review, just really comment on how humble Josh is.
I disbelieve it. I'm like, really? That's amazing.
Yeah, I think everyone does that. That's really.
To average 5 stars, I don't know why. I don't think we're that good at this, but over a long period of time with a large sample.
Clearly not this week.
No.
I can't tell if this is a good show or not.
I mean, not for years.
Yeah. Anyway, any way you can help spread the word, we do appreciate that. We see people do it all the time, and we thank those who do. And this is the end of the show.
Oh.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
I gotta go jump in the marinara trench.
Oh, that
I'm so hungry.
Delightful.
Yeah.
You want to add a little extra sautéed garlic to it to really make it pop.
Yeah, at this point, I'll take whatever I can get.
A little sausage in there just to bring out the body of it.
Oh, God.
The scenery's so pleasing.